College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please. To John Rothstein, please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and a break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children in bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast, and we will break down the 2016 NCAA tournament from soup to nuts. 68 have become 16, and later in this show, we'll be joined by Iowa State head coach Steve Prohm, whose team will be in the Midwest Regional semifinals later this week in Chicago against Virginia. And you've heard me talk about All and Sundry for a couple of weeks now and how they make the finest handcrafted shoes. They really create a unique experience where you select your style of shoe, whether for work or play, then you choose the material, add custom features, and then select a color. They source all the materials and build each one by hand. Without a middleman, you get the savings. If you're a shoe guy, All and Sundry is for you. They'd love to have you visit their showroom if you're in New York, located right in Midtown. Nick and his team will definitely take great care of you. So be sure to check out allandsundry.com for more, or give them a call to set up an appointment at the NYC store. That's allandsundry.com. And want you to check us out on iTunes and give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also check out the College Hoops Today page on Facebook and give us a like, or if you know you're one of the people that hate fun, give us a dislike. Anyway, now moving to the 2016 NCAA tournament, I have had several conversations with my parents over the past couple years about how I don't think I will last until the age of 40 because of the unpredictability of college basketball. And there was never a stretch in my life where I was thinking about those sentiments that were echoed than the first 4 days of the 2016 NCAA tournament. Because I really believe that the first 4 days of the 2016 NCAA tournament were the best 4 days of an opening weekend that we have ever had in this unbelievable event. And just think about what we saw out of the gate. And I'm going to go region by region. Wichita State beats Vanderbilt, okay, in the first four with ease. And everybody, including myself, was talking about how Arizona was potentially the best sixth seed to ever play in the NCAA tournament. Wichita State ran away from Arizona. And then think about what happened in the St. Joe-Cincinnati game. St. Joe's beats Cincinnati by the slimmest margin in NCAA tournament history. Tenths of a second when Isaiah Miles made that three to go up by two late in that game, and then Octavius Ellis finished a dunk for Cincinnati when the ball was in the rim, but his hands were still on the ball, and St. Joe's advanced, and they eventually lost to Oregon in the round of 32. And then, what can you say about Northern Iowa? The NCAA tournament brings incredible highs and incredible lows, and the Panthers really illustrated that by beating Texas in maybe the most dramatic finish we've ever seen in the NCAA tournament, when Paul Jesperson, okay, made a bank shot from half court on Friday night. And then, in something that you really can't put into words, Northern Iowa gave up the biggest lead within 1 minute of the game being over in the history of college basketball when the Panthers gave up a 12-point lead, okay, with under 40 seconds to play, and then lost to Texas A&M in double overtime. These are things you cannot make up. And just when you think you found out the answers, if somebody else changes the questions. And that is what happened. Because it happened, okay, it felt like every hour, where we had these things that looked unfathomable. Purdue had a 15-point lead over Little Rock with 4 minutes to play. They wound up losing because they don't foul down the stretch. Gonzaga and Syracuse, okay, are two teams that a week before Selection Sunday were not going to be in a situation to get at-large bids to the NCAA tournament. They are now playing in the Sweet 16. It's unfathomable. West Virginia, who yours truly watched in the Big 12 tournament, and I watched West Virginia lock up Buddy Hield and then play Kansas to the brink in the Big 12 title game, and then West Virginia looked like it didn't belong on the court against Stephen F. Austin. And don't get me started on what happened, even though the game, okay, was more under the radar than other games, but the USC-Providence game, to me, was about as bad as I've seen in terms of end-of-game execution. And I do want to spend some time right now on the Middle Tennessee-Michigan State game because I think we're going to look back years from now and we're going to now really look at that game as the biggest upset in NCAA tournament history. And here's why. Have we seen twos lose to 15 seeds before? Absolutely. There is no questioning that. We have seen that. But Michigan State, in a year in which parity has dominated the sport, for all intents and purposes, this was the team that America had decided was the favorite to win a national championship because it had the best player in the country in Denzel Valentine, it had the best shooter in the country in Brent Forbes, and it had Tom Izzo. And Michigan State wasn't just beaten against Middle Tennessee State. The Spartans never led in the game. And it's not like they laid an egg offensively. Michigan State shot over 50% from the field. This is college basketball. This is the unexpected becoming the ordinary. This is the stuff that makes this event better than any other event in sports. And that is what has happened. And now we're in a situation where I thought Friday night was crazy. I thought Sunday was crazy. A couple of big picture things. A tremendous effort again by Indiana and Tom Crean to get into the Sweet 16 by beating Kentucky. Thomas Bryant was sensational. I thought that Wisconsin's close against Xavier was one of the more gutsy performances I have seen. Bronson Koenig didn't just make one three 4 feet behind the line against Xavier to tie the game. He made a fadeaway three at the buzzer to put the Musketeers out of their misery, and Remy Abel, their best defender, was draped over him. That was an unbelievable finish. And, you know, as you evaluate right now some of the other things that we saw, another thing you have to talk about is Villanova finally getting to the round of 32, which is something it hasn't done over the past 2 years under Jay Wright. They lost in the round of 32 to UConn and NC State. And for all the anarchy that we saw early in the NCAA tournament, we now are looking at a scenario in which the only double-digit seeds in the Sweet 16 are two programs that have been synonymous with college basketball in March for a long time, Syracuse and Gonzaga. You've got Kansas taking on Maryland, Mark Turgeon, okay, against his alma mater in the Sweet 16. And again, that part of the bracket opened up for Maryland because Cal had Murphy's Law hit the program at the absolute most inopportune time. Miami, a team that I have loved, if you've heard me all season long, will play Villanova in the South region. And again, that's the region of death. There were several casualties in that region. Cal and Arizona, most notably. And then in the region of mystery, we've got Oregon, Duke. We've got Oklahoma A&M. And on the other side of the bracket, the region of branding is well represented. In the East, you've got Carolina, Indiana. You've also got, okay, Wisconsin, Notre Dame. And then below it, you've got Virginia, Iowa State, a great contrast in styles. And you've got, you know, Gonzaga, Syracuse. Now, big picture stuff right now. I try to watch college basketball as much as anybody. I do not like to be in a situation where I'm not up to date, okay, on what's going on in the sport. And everybody knows that. Everybody who follows my work knows that. But I think right now the thing that you have to look big picture and really, really reiterate is that when people start to make arguments about what conference is the best in the sport, you can't really make a case anymore for any league other than the ACC, and here's why. Because the ACC has 15 teams, we see an imbalanced schedule, and the teams that are 13th, 14th, and 15th in that league are in situations where they are not making the league look as good as other leagues across the country because of the double round-robin format we see in a league like the Big 12, or because the Pac-12 only has 12 teams, so we're going to see teams that are better play each other more. But the ACC right now, 12-1 in the NCAA tournament. It's got 6 of the 16 teams left playing. And you have to remember, Louisville was not eligible for the NCAA tournament. They potentially would have been a second weekend team. And there's two other teams in this league, Virginia Tech and Clemson, that won double-digit games in conference. They both won 10 ACC games. So this league right now continues to separate itself from the pack. But the Big 12 does have 3 teams remaining in the NCAA tournament, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Iowa State. The head coach of the Cyclone, Steve Prohm, joins us next. Iowa State has advanced to the Sweet 16, and they will play Virginia later this week in Chicago. And the head coach of the Cyclones joins us now. He is Steve Prohm. And Steve, as you're joining us right now, is the feeling relief or is it joy that you've won 2 games so far in the NCAA tournament?
I think it was relief on the weekend. Right now it's joy, and now it's about preparation for Virginia. But we're ecstatic. You know, we're thrilled to be there. But, you know, we're focused on winning, and obviously we got a great opponent in Virginia. But there's a lot of joy. It's a Sweet 16. It's a special deal.
Steve, you inherited a team from Fred Hoiberg that was tailor-made for the postseason. Did you feel at all at times this year that since you had so many players back from the team a year ago that won the Big 12 tournament, that it was ready for the postseason in the NCAA tournament maybe a month ago before the brackets even came out?
You know, sometimes when you do, you have an experienced team or an older guy. Sometimes you're chomping out the bit just to get to tournament play. You know, you're almost – I don't want to say you negate the regular season, but you're almost just getting ready for tournament play. And you know, we lost Naz early, and our team, obviously, people, we went through a lot. But, I mean, along the way, we've had some really good wins, tough losses. But I think all that, I think the regular season got these guys in the right mental state to make a great run in the postseason. And, you know, we got beat in the conference tournament by Oklahoma, but that also kind of was a blessing in disguise because we really need to get Monte a lot of rest.
Now, you were not a part of Iowa State's loss in the round of 64 against UAB last year. I'm curious, was that discussed at all in your locker room prior to the start of the NCAA tournament within your team?
You know, I didn't talk to them about it from my focal point and from my standpoint, just because I wasn't here and I didn't really know what those kids were going through and dealing with. Some of the guys talked to me about it individually. I know as a whole, they talked to it. About each other, you know, they talked within each other about it a lot. And the last thing before we went out and played Iona, Jameel was like, remember 60-59, every possession matters. And so I know it was on those guys' mind. I think they, you know, a lot of guys said for about 2 weeks they just sat around here and stayed in their apartments because they were so sick after having a tremendous season to get knocked out in the first round because, you know, everybody defines, you know, March. That's where everybody gets defined, you know, the great players.
Iowa State head coach Steve Prohm joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Cyclones 23-11 will play top-seeded Virginia in the Midwest Regional later this week in Chicago. And Steve, you know, I'm curious, how did the pressure of getting this team to this point in the NCAA tournament compare to the pressure you felt when you were at Murray State and you were coaching in a conference tournament for one automatic bid? What are the differences?
You know, I think there's two. It's two totally different pressures. I did an article on this earlier in the year. You know, Murray State, you know, the regular season, you know, we won 25 games in a row last year and you get beat on a buzzer beater. And there's nothing like the feeling, the way your stomach, the pit in your stomach in those mid-major conference tournaments, because at the end of the day, you know, it's win or go home. Your body of work, it sometimes gets overlooked a little bit. And so there's just a different feeling when you got to win that conference tournament at this level. Or the BCS level here at Iowa State now, the pressure is just different because your body of work speaks volumes for what you've done, you know, top 50 wins, top 100 wins. But now you get into the postseason, and now the pit in the stomach is here, now in the NCAA tournament, because, you know, we do have expectations and we do feel like we have a team that can go far in this tournament.
Now, this is your first Power 5 job, and you obviously inherited a different type of situation than other Power 5 coaches do when they jump to the higher levels. What's the biggest thing you know about coaching in a Power 5 conference now that you didn't know prior to taking the Iowa State post?
Oh, I just think the biggest thing is night in, night out. There are just no night offs. You have to be good every night. You know, whether it's at Kansas, whether it's at Oklahoma State, whether it's at home against Baylor, home against Oklahoma. Sometimes, you know, as at Murray, there may be a game or two that you may not play your best, but you may be able to still win and be successful. If you're not, you don't play well for 40 minutes, if you're not locked in here and in this league, you'll get beat. And I think that's the biggest change and biggest focus. Obviously, we got great players in this league, but there's great players everywhere. But the night in, the night out, the grind of this league is that's the biggest change and the biggest difference that you've got to be ready for. And then you've got to deal with so many other factors. I think, you know, you've got to have relationships with your kids. You've got to make sure the kids at this level see that there's a bigger purpose and that winning is going to help everybody, you know, because everybody's thinking, what's going to happen to me when I leave here, you know, NBA, overseas, because 1 through 13, everybody thinks they have an opportunity. And so you got to make sure people are seeing the whole picture and people understand that it's more about themselves. It's about a bigger picture.
You know, Fred Hoiberg is revered in Ames more than any other figure in that community. How hard was it to be yourself, Steve Prohm, the same guy that had great success at Murray State, when everyone in the Cyclones program was so used to just Fred being Fred?
It was extremely tough. You know, I'm not one to run from that or say it wasn't. You know, I'm pretty humble. I don't really have an ego. And so it's easy for me to say that it was extremely hard for me to be myself. At times I was trying to be Fred. At times I was trying to be who people wanted me to be around here. I think our teams played its best, if you ask George or you ask some of these other guys, when I've been Steve Prohm. And I just got to be Steve. And I think right now I have a good piece about myself, about being Steve Prohm, that I am the head coach of Iowa State. And I can use Fred as a resource to help. He's been tremendous through the process. But I've got to be myself, and that's been really good for a long time. But I did have some struggles with that, and that I think it affected our teams at times. But I think we're all in a good place right now.
What's the biggest thing that you learned about Fred Hoiberg and your dealings with him that you didn't know when you were at Murray State watching Iowa State and watching Fred from a distance?
Obviously, you know, I love watching his teams play. We had some similarities, but as much as I thought our teams played similar, there are a lot of differences. But I think the biggest thing I can say about Fred is just, I think, the character of who he is. And, you know, a lot of times people leave jobs and they may not want great success for the job that they left. I don't know if that makes sense. But, you know, they go off and, you know, hey, I did a great job, and you're not really pulling for that next guy. And when you have a guy like Fred that left and is an alumni, is from Ames, he's excited. He called me after this game. We wanted to go to Sweet 16, and he's as fired up as anybody. And I think that speaks volumes about who he is as a man. And obviously he's a brilliant offensive coach and super talented in that regards. But I think the two things that I've found out about Fred is obviously he's a superman, but he's got an unbelievable relationships with these kids, and these kids really looked up to him. And that's what I hope I can continue to grow here.
Iowa State coach Steve Prohm joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Iowa State and Virginia Midwest Regional Semifinals later this week in Chicago. And Steve, the Big 12 gets 7 teams in the NCAA tournament, and no team was seeded worse than an 8 seed. Did you still have faith that your team was maybe better than its record when you were losing games in conference play because the league was so good?
Yeah, that's the thing I just kept trying to explain to our guys is that, and if we were showing up every night and we were getting beat 87-67, then, man, we really need to be questioning some things. But, you know, guys, we're playing on the road at Baylor. We lose at the buzzer. We're up 1 at Kansas with 3 minutes to go, and they're as good or better than anybody in the country. Oklahoma, we had a shot to win. Texas Tech, we got beat in overtime, and we're up late in that game. We lost to Texas in overtime. We lost so many tough, tough, close road games that I thought our team over the last couple weeks of the season was getting better, and, mm-hmm. you know, we knew that as a team. But our league, even though you're losing games, you still may be getting better because the talent in this league. And so it's good that we've got 3 teams in the Sweet 16. But I think because of the league we played tonight, I think it kept our guys confident. Obviously, losing stuff, we wanted that. We had a goal to win a Big 12 regular season championship. But our ultimate goal is to get to Houston, and it starts Friday with Virginia.
George Niang has scored 28 points in each of his first 2 NCAA tournament games. Did you notice a change in his urgency since the postseason began?
Yeah, we met Monday before we went to Denver, and we had a heart-to-heart. Monday, we didn't have a bad practice, but it wasn't a great practice. You know, it was sloppy at times, and we met, and we just really had a heart-to-heart, and he wanted to make sure that he's remembered here. And regardless of what we do, he's going to be remembered here in Ames because he's one of the best ever to play here. But we do want to have something special for this team and for this program and for this school. And we talked about that a lot Monday. And his focus is at an all-time high. I think our offense is – I think I have a good understanding now where George needs to be and what we need to do with George. And I just thought the last 4 or 5 minutes of that first half against Little Rock, that was as good as he's been all year, and that really was – our defense was good, but his offensive explosion at the end of the first half, that really won us the game. He's tremendous. He's 28 back-to-back games. We're going to need another performance like that Friday.
You know, Iowa State, as you know, under Fred Hoiberg, really became a destination for transfers, and Deontay Burton looks like he's the next one to take a seat at that table. And, Steve, I thought this guy for your team was the unsung presence this year for Iowa State because of the personnel issues that you had at certain points. Did you ever, when you were driving to work or just walking around campus sometimes by yourself, just stop and say, where would we be without Deontay Burton?
Yeah, Deontay's been terrific, and, you know, his role has changed throughout this year. You know, it's so hard to come in as a mid-year guy. He came out really guns blazing, played extremely well, was trying to get him more minutes. Then we had the suspension with Jameel, and then he really got his minutes extended. And now Jameel is back in a good place, and so Deontay's, you know, minutes have wavered at different times, whether it's 15, whether it's 20. But he was great for us against Little Rock. He's been really good for us on both ends, you know, toughness defensively, being able to rebound, and then just being another offensive presence that can make plays and really put pressure on the rim and put pressure on the basket. And Deontay's been terrific. You know, he's one of our, you know, we have six guys, we play a bunch, and he's obviously one of those six. And we're going to need him against Virginia to match up with those guys up front and match their toughness.
And, you know, the game against Virginia on Friday features a unique contrast in styles. What are your early impressions of Tony Bennett and the Cavaliers?
Well, Tony's a guy that I've, you know, looked up to from afar for a lot of reasons, for the kind of man he is and because of the kind of coach he is as well and the success he's had. They're very good. They're almost like a high-major version of Little Rock when you look at their stats statistically. Only give up 59 points a game, really turn you over on offense. Going to run a good, I would say, motion, but run their pattern, flare screens, pin downs, baseline screens, and really get ball reversal and try to wear you down. And then defensively, you know, really in gaps, really physical. It's a team that, you know, we've got to take care of the basketball. We can't give points off turnovers. We've got to give them one shot and out. And if we can take care of the ball, shot selection is important, really try to spread them out, and then defend with one shot, we're going to give ourselves a great opportunity. We got a lot of respect for them. Obviously, Brogdon is terrific, but they've got more than him. Gill up front is terrific. They've got several good players.
Final thing here for me, Steve. You know, you took over a ready-made team at Iowa State, and you've done your part with this group regardless of what happens in Chicago. To the Iowa State fan right now, how do you plan to sustain the success that this program has had over the past few years, considering you're at a place that's been built in unconventional ways?
Well, you look at, you know, their top seven last year, and I looked at my top seven, what I had for Murray, when we're talking about both rosters from last year, and both teams were built the same way. You know, a couple high school kids, couple of junior college kids, and then a couple of transfers. And so I think I understand that model. It's a model that I want to keep here. You know, we want to continue to look to transfer the fifth year out. We want to continue to try to recruit a couple good four-year guys and then junior college kids when they fit. I like our group coming back next year. If Morris ends up coming back, you know, we'll meet with him at the end of the year. But if he comes back, you've got Naz Long back on the perimeter, you got Matt Thomas, Nick Babb sitting out, another really good perimeter guy. We signed a really good junior college point guard. And so I like our perimeter guys. You got Burton back that can play a little bit everywhere. And so if we could add a couple more post guys, I think I know a lot of people may have kind of written us off for next year. I really like our roster as it's shaping up for next year. But I think we'll keep the same model Fred did. I think it's worked for me in the past, and it's worked here. And we got a great, great fan base, so we got to keep winning for them.
Well, Steve, we appreciate you joining us. We know how busy you are. Congratulations on a great first season in Ames, and best of luck in Chicago against Virginia.
Hey, thanks so much, John. I really appreciate you.
You guys, Iowa State head coach Steve Prohm, Cyclones and Virginia, later this week in Chicago as part of the Sweet 16. Special thanks to Steve Prohm for joining the College Hoops Today podcast. This is John Rothstein in Iowa State, again, in a great contrast in styles against Virginia later this week in the Sweet 16 in Chicago. And again, we want you to check us out on iTunes. Let us know about the product that we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also check out the College Hoops Today page on Facebook and let us know what you think as well via that social media platform. Time now to dive into the Sweet 16, and we start with the region of death, the South region. Kansas against Maryland in this game. Look, I have not liked something about Maryland all season long. The Terps have advanced. They've won two games, but they have beaten South Dakota State and Hawaii. Kansas is playing better than any other team in college basketball. They've won 16 consecutive games. I like Kansas, especially if Wayne Selden continues to play as well offensively as he has been playing. If Wayne Selden scores 15 or more points a game, I don't think Kansas can lose the rest of the NCAA tournament. Miami against Villanova. The elephant is out of the room for Villanova. The Cats are back in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2009, the year that they went to the Final Four under Jay Wright. And the interesting thing about Villanova is this. Villanova's win over Iowa at the Barclays Center on Sunday reminded me of the Cats' round of 32 victory, okay, over UCLA in 2009 when the Cats wound up in the Final Four. So how does Villanova match up with Miami? Miami, okay, has the ability to flex its roster to match up with Villanova's speed, skill, and lack of size. If Villanova goes small with Chris Jenkins at power forward, Jim Larrañaga can shift McClellan to power forward, Sheldon McClellan, and then give more minutes for Jaquan Newton and play smaller. So I think Miami matches up well with Villanova. I think they're a better rebounding team than Villanova. The key is this. How will Angel Rodriguez handle Villanova's pressure? Because Villanova's pressure really got to Iowa. I'm going to take with Miami. I had Kansas and Miami in the Elite Eight in the region of death when the tournament started. I'm not wavering from that prediction. So we go to the region of mystery, the West region. Look, Oregon and Duke is a fascinating matchup. This is not vintage Duke. The Blue Devils, again, have had double-digit losses this season. They beat Yale and they beat UNC Wilmington to get to the Sweet 16. Oregon, okay, is great at exploiting mismatches with Dylan Brooks at power forward. I don't know if that's going to be as effective as it was against traditional teams because Brandon Ingram is not your traditional big, and we saw St. Joe's, I think, really give Oregon some fits with their unconventional style on Sunday. But I think Oregon's pressure, okay, and the ability of Oregon to turn people over could really be augmented against Duke because Duke does not have a point guard that's a traditional point guard. I'm going to take Oregon to the Elite Eight, and I'm also going to take Oklahoma. And look, the time, okay, is now to stop talking about Oklahoma's lack of an interior presence. They are who they are. It's Cousins, it's Woodard, and it's Buddy Hield. This team, again, had a great performance from its perimeter, 36 from Hield against VCU. I like Oklahoma against Oregon. My left side of the bracket, I'm going to take Kansas and Oklahoma to go to the Final Four, and I'm going to have Kansas representing that side in a national title game. Carolina and Indiana is an interesting game in Brooklyn. Look, Indiana has had an unbelievable season, and Thomas Bryant was the key for Indiana down the stretch against Kentucky, but Thomas Bryant is stepping up a weight class against North Carolina. Indiana has an edge in the game in the backcourt, but I think that Carolina's bigs, too much for Bryant. I could see Bryant getting in the foul trouble. I could see North Carolina's four horsemen, Johnson and Meeks and Hicks and James, wearing down Bryant. And I've got Carolina advancing to the East Regional Finals in the region of branding. And I'm going to go with Wisconsin. I just think right now Koenig and Hayes are too grizzled. They're too seasoned. And how about this stat? Bronson Koenig and Nigel Hayes in 3 years at Wisconsin, 11-2 overall in the NCAA tournament. I think a big key to watch in this game for Wisconsin is Ethan Happ, the redshirt freshman that was named Big Ten Player of the Year. Big Ten Freshman of the Year. Check that. Ethan Happ, I think Ethan Happ could really do a nice job on Zach August down low. So I'm going to take North Carolina and Wisconsin, and I have North Carolina representing the region of branding, the East region right there. And then in the Midwest, look, Virginia and Iowa State is as fascinating a contrast of styles as we've seen in this NCAA tournament. Now, teams that have given Virginia fits have had stretch forwards that could extend the defense. There is not a more dangerous skilled power forward in this tournament, in my opinion, than George Niang. Brandon Ingram, I think, is more of a three playing four, but George Niang, okay, and Iowa State against Virginia is the ultimate contrast in styles. I'm going to pick Virginia to win the game because I think if Virginia doesn't break through right now, I don't know if they're ever going to be able to break through in the NCAA tournament. Now, I also want to look at this Gonzaga-Syracuse game, and I think that Syracuse, okay, has a distinct edge in the backcourt, and I think that Gonzaga has an edge in the front court. I'm going to take Syracuse to win the game because of its perimeter play, and that would set up a Virginia-Syracuse regional final, and I have Virginia, and I'm going to take Kansas over Carolina for the whole ball of wax to win the national championship. Now, the only thing for sure in college basketball is that nothing's for sure, and I will go back to what we saw over the weekend. Northern Iowa, okay, up at a higher rate than any other team, okay, in college basketball history that lost a lead in the final minute. And that's what we're dealing with right now. We're dealing with teams in Syracuse and Gonzaga playing in the Sweet 16 that probably wouldn't have gotten at-large bids to the NCAA tournament if Selection Sunday was 7 days before it happened. And we've got a team in Michigan State that was everybody's favorite to win the national championship, lose in a game against Middle Tennessee where it never led. And what's crazier about that, I talked to a Conference USA head coach before the Conference USA tournament. And he said, John, there's one team you got to look out for in our league. It's UAB, because they could win a game in the tournament. And UAB didn't even make the field. College basketball, where the unexpected becomes the ordinary. We'll be back right here. Same bat time, same bat channel. Enjoy the games when we hook up with you next week. 16 will become 4. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.